This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In the first half of the show, we heard from Senator Rick Santorum, who sponsored the partial birth abortion ban. My guest, Gloria Felt, is the president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America. She describes that law as the culmination of a long strategy by right-wing extremists who have been working ever since Roe to take away a woman's right to control her reproductive destiny. Felt has written a new book called The War on Choice, The Right-Wing Attack on Women's Rights and How to Fight Back. The 2004 Republican platform renews its call for a human life amendment to the Constitution that would ban abortion. What would a human life amendment in the Constitution mean, in your opinion?
It would mean that a woman no longer has a right to her own life. The human and civil right to make our own childbearing decisions is the most precious and fundamental right that we have. For a woman, without that ability to determine whether and when we bear children, and that works both in the having children and not having children perspective. If we don't have that ability to control our own fertility, we don't have the ability to determine anything else about our own lives. And frankly, that means it's not a good policy for families. It's not a good policy for children.
What would it mean to have legislation that made it clear that the 14th Amendment's protections apply to unborn children, which has been in the Republican platform?
Well, one of the dots that I'm connecting in the War on Choice is how that initiative, which aims to give a fertilized egg from the moment of conception rights that are equal to or greater than that of the woman, undermines everything about reproductive rights and access to reproductive health care, including many birth control methods, including the basic principle that we have the freedom in the United States of America to make our own decisions about whether and when to have children.
In your political perception, do you think that this is likely to happen, that there would be legislation making it clear that the 14th Amendment's protections apply to unborn children?
Well, I think you have to look at how close we are overall to losing these fundamental human and civil rights to make our own childbearing decisions, which go far beyond abortion and go toward the ability to have sexual and reproductive rights of all kinds and deciding when to have children, whether to have children or not to have children, whether to be able to use birth control and what method of birth control to be able to use. The Supreme Court today stands 5-4, ready to not just overturn Roe on whatever grounds, and perhaps that will be the grounds, but perhaps it will be something else. We're that close, and it's important for people to understand that the President of the United States appoints judges. The judges that are appointed to the lower federal courts are deciding the majority of those cases. So it's not just who's appointed to the United States Supreme Court, but one more anti-choice appointment to the United States Supreme Court will tip the balance 5-4 against reproductive rights and access to reproductive health care. I don't know what basis they might make that decision on, but it could be on the basis of the 14th Amendment.
If the fetus that a woman is carrying has equal rights with the woman who's carrying it, are there times that you would envision the health or well-being of the two coming into conflict?
Well, certainly. Look, I'm a mother of three. I'm a grandmother of nine, a great-grandmother of one. I know what it is to be pregnant. I know what it is to have hopes and dreams for your children. I know what it means to love and nurture children throughout their lives. So I guess I come at this from a very personal perspective, as well as understanding some of the science and law of it. And the fact is that, you know, there are always values in conflict in these situations. What I know from my 30 years of holding women's hands and understanding what women go through when they make the decision about whether or not to carry a pregnancy to term is that women can be trusted to make sound moral judgments about that. I mean, women do understand, and so that there are values in conflict, and the legal question is always ultimately one about when does the value of a fertilized egg become higher than the value of the woman in whose body it resides and whose body it depends upon. In other words, even a fetus at any stage of pregnancy is dependent upon the body of the woman for its very life. So the woman and the life of the woman always have to have primacy. And by the way, there are vastly different religious points of views about that as well. And the fact that we live in a pluralistic democracy means that we need to understand and respect that different value systems and different religions will approach that question differently, and therefore we should not have laws that supersede that.
The Republican Party has supported the appointment of judges who are against abortion. How do you think that's been affecting the judicial system?
The appointments that President Bush has made have been devastating to reproductive rights and health care already, even though he hasn't yet had an opportunity to appoint anyone to the United States Supreme Court. The lower federal courts actually decide the overwhelming majority of the cases that affect our lives every day in the tens of thousands every year, as opposed to fewer than 100 cases a year that are decided by the United States Supreme Court. President Bush and his allies in the Senate have been able to push through more judges than, certainly more than Bill Clinton was able to push through in this time period, and with much less opposition, because much of that time the same party has controlled the Senate as the White House, so that there have not been those balances of power that usually exist in our government. The upshot of that is that if President Bush has an opportunity in the next 4 years to continue on this path, 11 of the 13 federal circuit courts of appeals will be in solid anti-choice hands. And only one additional anti-choice appointment to the United States Supreme Court could turn the balance there from 5-4 in favor of Roe v. Wade to 5-4 opposed to Roe v. Wade.
You oppose the recently passed Unborn Victims of Violence Act, which allows federal prosecutors to charge criminals separately for the crime against the woman and the crime against the fetus the woman is carrying. Why do you oppose it?
We oppose that law because it doesn't do anything to prevent violence against women. And that's why violence prevention organizations also oppose this legislation, incidentally. We are not alone in that opposition. They understand that this law has a purpose, and its purpose is to give the right of legal personhood to a fertilized egg from the moment of conception. There is absolutely nothing in this law that enhances penalties against someone who commits violence against a pregnant woman or against a woman at all. And that's what we should be aiming for. Many of the members of Congress tried to provide amendments, provide better language that would enhance penalties that would further punish individuals for that kind of violence against a pregnant woman. Incidentally, pregnant women are about 20% more likely to be physically abused or murdered than non-pregnant women. This law doesn't do anything to help that. It would not have helped Lacey Peterson, for example, but it is a brazen and blatant attempt to attribute legal personhood to a fertilized egg from the moment of conception so that they can make the fertilized egg more important in the law than a woman.
The Partial Birth Abortion Act, which was passed last year and prohibits abortions in the second and third trimester, is something that you strongly oppose. What is the procedure and why do you oppose it?
The abortion ban law, I think, is probably one of the most misunderstood pieces of legislation, and that's deliberately so, because from the very beginning, its proponents understood that they were not going to outlaw abortion with this abortion ban. Instead, what they were trying to do was to create a new language. They were trying to create a public relations victory and to confuse people about what they were doing. And I must say, they have been somewhat successful in that endeavor, although I believe we're all beginning to understand better what they have been trying to do. The abortion ban law, which was passed by Congress and signed by President Bush last November, is a direct stake into the heart of the principles of reproductive rights. And it outlaws abortions even as early as the beginning of the second trimester for any reason. It outlaws a vague and undefined range of techniques that doctors use in order to be able to provide the best care for their patients. And by that I mean doctors are always trying to protect the woman's health and her future fertility, her future ability to bear children. So this law is unconstitutional under Roe. Is an almost precisely identical law has already been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. And again, Congress knows this. John Ashcroft knows this. George Bush knows this. But the Ashcroft Justice Department is aggressively defending this law in spite of the fact that it is unconstitutional, because he hopes that by the time it works its way up to the Supreme Court, there will be a different Supreme Court.
Well, the law is currently not being enforced because of constitutional challenges, including one in a federal court in California, which declared it unconstitutional. So is it officially heading toward the Supreme Court now?
The Justice Department has filed an appeal in the case, the California case, that was where the law was found unconstitutional. That case was brought by Planned Parenthood. So that one is already beginning to, that will now go to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So it's beginning its trip to the United States Supreme Court.
So am I right in saying that right now that law is not being enforced because of constitutional challenges?
The law, the abortion ban law, is not being enforced right now because of constitutional challenges to it.
But what do you say to those who would argue that the abortions that are done in the second or third trimester are barbaric because the fetus is already partially formed? It more closely resembles what a baby would look like upon delivery, and the skull is crushed.
Well, I suggest that people go back and read Roe v. Wade. What Roe said is that in the third trimester and after fetal viability, states can outlaw abortion except to save the life or preserve the health of the woman. And states, almost every state, has done that. So, you know what? The late-term issue isn't even an issue. I think almost everyone agrees that if a woman's life is in danger, or if her health is egregiously compromised, or if she is pregnant with a fetus that has anomalies that are not consistent with life, or if it has died inside of her, you know, it ought to be a medical decision that she makes with her doctor. But the abortion ban law doesn't touch that at all. It's about striking a blow to the heart of the most fundamental right to make our own childbearing decisions without political interference.
On what grounds have the courts that have ruled the partial birth abortion ban unconstitutional, on what grounds have they ruled it so?
The courts have ruled abortion ban legislation unconstitutional in the past because the laws are unconstitutionally vague. It's hard for a doctor, and impossible for a doctor, to know whether or when they're breaking the law. It's also unconstitutional because there is no health exception, and the courts have ruled over and over and over again that that these are health issues, that these are medical issues, and that a woman's health has to take precedence in every case. It also, in some instances, has been found unconstitutional because it just strikes a blow straight to the heart of the fundamental right to make our own basic childbearing decisions as articulated in Roe v. Wade.
Let's step back a minute and look at the big picture. You have been active in advocating a woman's right to choose abortion, active in advocating good access to birth control for many years. What are some of the ways that you have seen the battlefield, so to speak, change?
I think it's important to first recognize all of the advances that have been made, because 100 years ago, birth control was illegal in this country. Women died regularly from the consequences of too frequent pregnancy and unsafe abortion. Just as in the developing world today, a woman dies every minute from those same causes. That's what it was like here in the United States 100 years ago. So first of all, I think we should recognize that we've come a long way. First, birth control became legal. Then abortion became legal. Family planning funding was provided for low-income women who couldn't otherwise have had access to it. The birth control pill, which frankly saved my life as a young woman growing up in rural West Texas, as a young mother of three, when the birth control pill came out, it completely saved my life. So let's look at all the successes. I think that all those successes in and of themselves have frightened people who don't want women to have an equal place at life's table. And so there is a huge backlash against it. There has been a hidden war on reproductive rights. And right now, while Americans are preoccupied with war elsewhere in the world, this hidden war is even harder to expose because we just have many other things on our minds. And we need to get the full picture of the machinery that is amassed, because every step since Roe v. Wade, which was decided just over 30 years ago, has now been a step backward. And that means that if you are young, if you are poor, if you live in one of the 87% of counties that has no abortion provider, your access to that particular choice is very seriously limited. If you are young, if you are poor, if your family planning program locally has been defunded, you may not be able to get the birth control that would help you prevent that unintended pregnancy and abortion in the first place.
I know that some doctors who perform abortions have found that their lives are in danger, that they are threatened, and at least one doctor was killed because he performed abortions. Now, what about you? You're the head of National Planned Parenthood. Are there threats against you? Do you have to be careful?
I do take prudent care. I have had the range of threats to my life, and just pure simple nastiness and harassment. But I think I couldn't possibly be doing more important work. And I think what people need to understand is that those who oppose a woman's right to choose are so extreme. I mean, there is an element of that group that are so extreme that they will stop at nothing, even murder. I think that tells you a little bit. I mean, murder in the name of life? Give me a break.
In your book, The War on Choice, you write a bit personally about your own life, and you say that in 1957, when you were young, you got pregnant out of wedlock, you got married, and 6 months later, you knew the marriage was a mistake. You had three small children by the time you were 20. How does that experience affect your positions on birth control and abortion?
Well, I believe, as the title of my previous book says, behind every choice is a story. And certainly my passion for making sure that women today and tomorrow will be able to have both the freedom to control their fertility and the access to the birth control and reproductive health services that make that freedom actually meaningful. It comes from knowing what life was without choice. In the 1950s in rural West Texas, young women weren't encouraged to get an education, to have a career, to know that they had other value, that their life had value over and beyond being a mother, as important as it is to be a mother and to be a good mother, women's lives do have greater value than that, independent value from that as well. And we weren't taught that. And that's one of the things I'm so passionate about wanting young women to understand. And I think most young women today do get that. But what they don't know is how close they are to losing the reproductive freedoms that make them able to actually exercise those other choices.
Well, Gloria Felt, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Gloria Felt is the president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America and author of the book, The War on Choice.